Welcome to the Byland Podcast. My name is Emery, and this is episode 19 with Chris McMaster from ULA Equipment. Welcome back to the Byland Podcast. My name is Emery. Thank you so much for joining me. And before I go into the episode details, I wanted to apologize for my last episode and the kind of technical glitches that I was having to the upload side of things. It wasn't on my side, it was on the Squarespace side. I've chosen to host my podcast with Squarespace, and there is something funky going on, not just with my podcast, but for every podcaster out there using Squarespace and using a redirect to track downloads and statistics and stuff. So I apologize in advance if this episode has the same problem. I don't really know if there's a whole lot I can do with it until I switch platforms, and that's kind of a pain in the butt. So back to the episode, episode 19. I have Chris McMaster on from ULA Equipment. Chris is the owner of ULA, and I wanted to find out what the big deal is with ULA. They're a very popular pack choice on the PCT and with long distance hikers. So we kind of go over the design, get to know who Chris is, who the company is, what they do, and how they do it. And yeah, this is kind of an educational get to know ULA podcast. So thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's do it. Chris, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day, man.
Oh, my pleasure.
Do you want to do a quick introduction to yourself, what you do with ULA, and what ULA is?
Yeah, I can do that. So I own ULA. I am probably the least important person that works at ULA, but I do own it. My wife and I bought it from Brian Frankel in 2009. And Brian was a friend of my daughter's, actually spent time at my house a couple times and before he even started this business. So I was kind of fascinated by the business that he started. So we kept in touch over the years. And I think that was about 2001, I think, that he started it. And basically it came to light that he was thinking about getting out of it. I was living back east at the time, looking for a way to get back out west. And kind of long story short, we talked for about a year and ended up coming to a deal where we bought it from him. And that's kind of that. You know, he stayed on with us for about 2 or 3 months just kind of show me the ropes. I mean, we're still friends, but he didn't have anything really to do with the business anymore. So that's pretty much who I am, how we got into the business. So.
What's the origin of ULA? I know that it probably goes back, you know, you weren't there from the original founding of it, but what was his original intent and what was his background and how did the pack business come about?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there was kind of guys like Brian, there were a couple other guys, Henry Shires, Ron Moak, all the guys that are still in the business, kind of independently were into long distance hiking, and they started doing, you know, I think they all three did the PCT, Pacific Coast Trail. And there was like zero gear out there that was light and durable. You know, the only thing out there were, you know, traditional Kelty packs, Gregory packs, whatever. And so they started making their own stuff and going in different directions. Henry started with tents and Brian started with backpacks. And there was a real super ultra light movement. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. And that's actually where GoLite got started. Mm. And Brian went in a little different route. Started making stuff that was, you know, not quite just crazy light, but a little more comfortable, but super durable. And he had a pretty good niche there, and we still do. So basically, that's how it got started. Guys were making gear because nobody else was making it, and they turned into businesses.
And they were kind of focused on the ultralight side of things, trying to cut that weight out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was no even light, you know, let alone ultralight, yeah. Commercially. You know, I mean, just everything was just big, heavy, bulky, carry 80 pounds and suck it up, you know.
Do you know about what, maybe just a general time frame, like before you came on, how long ULA had been around for?
Yeah, they've been, Brian has started the company, I think, in 2001, and then we bought it in 2009. So, yeah, so, you know, or eight or 9 years.
Yeah, that was...
We've actually owned it longer than he did at this point.
So what's your... So you learned of ULA, you got to know him. What's your background prior to ULA, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, man, you name it. I have been a pig farmer, stockbroker, contractor, you know, owned bagel shops, you name it. Prior to... just right prior to learning with Brian, I had a chain of bagel shops back east, and sold my life, kind of changed a lot. I ended up selling those and moving out to Montana, which is where I met Brian. So I had a lot of business background, nothing, you know, in terms of manufacturing or anything like that, but I've always lived outside. So, you know, to me, anything that's outside, whether cycling, backpacking, fishing, you know, I can speak the language pretty well because it's what I do. It's what my life's about.
Do you, I'm always fascinated with business. So I guess, do you recall what it was about ULA that kind of attracted you to it? Like there's a bunch of different companies out there. I would imagine at the time when you were thinking about buying this business, what was it specifically about ULA that you saw that was like, okay, cool? Because I remember doing research on backpacks. I knew of ULA. And then now, I mean, they're a very, very popular pack for long distance hikers. And now you're starting to see it in local shops. So what I would imagine that you implemented a lot of that stuff. What was it in ULA that you thought was like, okay, dude, this is super valuable to the end user?
So probably most of the things I thought when I bought the company turned out to be wrong. And, but what I thought, well, here's the thing, like Brian really didn't like dealing with people all that much. And the company got to the point where he was having to deal with people. He couldn't just sit in the back and make backpacks, which is what he loved. And so that's kind of why he wanted to cash out of it. And I'm probably a lot more of a people person and really didn't want to sit in the back and make backpacks. Mm-hmm. So I just saw an opportunity for, you know, for me to use the skills that I had just because the company was where it was. But I know I could never have done what Brian did. I could never have developed those products. And basically we use the same designs on almost all of them now,
yeah.
You know, and gotten that business off the ground. But I also think that he probably wouldn't have been able to take it to the level where it is right now, you know? So we both kind of came at the right time, you know, came and went at the right time.
It's interesting when I started seeing ULA packs, on the trail, to me, you know, you have this big spread of packs that people are using. You have like the standard, or let's start with like hunting packs, you know, very durable. And then you have like those crazy ultralight guys that are, they look like little day sacks, you know, on their backpack. They might as well just have a little hip pouch with everything in them. And I always imagined, and you have to tell me if this is correct or not, but my impression of ULA that the ULA gave me was kind of this good mix between like that durability and your intro into super ultralight stuff. That's like, you weren't afraid to, like, these users clearly aren't afraid to jump into an ultralight pack, because I think that if someone were to Google ultralight backpack, they're going to see some crazy stuff. Whereas like ULA has this really great mix. Is that true of, do you think that's true of what ULA is, having a good mix?
Yeah, no, I think that is. And that, you know, it was not intentional when I bought the company, but it became obvious that that was the smart way to go.
Yeah.
The ultralight space was really crowded. You know, at that time you had GoLite, you had Gossamer Gear, you had a couple other guys, you know, just making silly light stuff And that was kind of the whole purpose, which is how light can we make it? Mm-hmm. And then on the other spectrum, you had Osprey, which was still, yep. and they still are, making, heavier mass production stuff, and then getting up into the bigger stuff like Gregory, which has, always been heavier. So there was a space for us to, A, have a good lightweight pack, but we realized that we were not interested in being the lightest at all. So much of our business was with thru hikers at the time, and mm-hmm. still is. And, pack failure for a thru hiker is not a good thing.
No.
It sucks. So we just really, we started, Rodney and I, my partner, pretty much from year one is like, okay, we're going to eliminate problems. That's going to be our goal. So we're going to make it so that just basically nobody on the trail has a problem with our pack. And that was really what we started with. And I think you're never going to be 100% perfect at that, but we've really eliminated almost everything that was kind of routinely a problem. And the consequence of that is the packs, they're not the lightest ones that are out there, but I'm going to put them up with just about anybody in terms of durability and comfort. We've got that kind of three-legged stool of light, comfortable, and durable.
Well, so, oh man, I love that analogy of this three-legged stool. It sounds like that's like a pillar of ULA, or at least like how you guys look at stuff. And I think when people go in one way, one direction or the other too much, you find yourself in this weird space where it's like, oh man, that's super ultra light, but that's super uncomfortable, or that's super ultra durable, but then that's like big, bulky, and heavy. Was that idea of that three-legged stool, was that something that you kind of came across, or was that kind of ingrained in the company when you took over?
No, it was definitely not. I think the lightness was a lot more of the focus when we bought it. And it just became just observing the business, getting to know our customers and learning what people wanted. And then there was also the idea that, our packs were super popular among thru hikers then. They're way more so now.
Yeah.
But the whole idea was also that, if it's good for a thru hiker, then it's going to be really good for a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
And so we want to, comfort's going to be like a really big thing, and just, not having problems because the fabrics are too flimsy. It's been having a great warranty, that sort of thing. So yeah, it kind of evolved a little bit. It definitely wasn't the message of the company when we bought it.
Yeah,
for sure. But it became.
I learned a lot when you go through so many repetitions of wearing your pack all day long, taking it off, setting up camp, and just wash, rinse, repeat. One of the takeaways I had from doing a long trail was, if thru hikers are buying off on a piece of gear, you should probably pay attention to it, because they're stuck with that piece of gear for a long time, and they're not going to put up, most of them probably aren't going to put up with a junk product.
There's a huge communication system on the trail, it's all word of mouth. We've really never done any advertising.
Yeah.
We figured that if we put out a good quality product, people are going to tell their friends, and they have. And so, it's all about results. It really is. You can't BS your way through this, and advertise and market your way through it. If you don't have a product that holds up and is comfortable and you back it up, people are going to figure that out pretty quickly. And, I don't know if you're aware of any of this, but there have been some surveys. There's a guy that does surveys on the Pacific Crest Trail and lately the Continental Divide Trail. And since he's been doing that survey the last 3 years, our circuit has been the number one pack. And I think our Catalyst has been somewhere between third and fifth every year. This is like 600-700 people that he interviewed, And circuit again, number one on the Continental Divide Trail.
Wow.
And then there's some people that do surveys on the Appalachian Trail, which is a little different mindset. Mm-hmm. And we've been number two there for the same 3 years. So, we're a little wart on Osprey's butt, you know, basically. But, yeah. You know, we still beat them on two out of the three trails, and they only beat us in the Appalachian Trail. So that's pretty really cool. Great. And that's word of mouth, yeah.
Well, so maybe that's a good segue into how the design principles, maybe not design principles, but can you kind of basically describe what a ULA pack is? Because from what I can tell, the majority of your packs, like, you guys have a set design and you guys are kind of just tweaking it here and there for various use cases. So can you kind of go through and describe what you guys are focused on and why your packs may be differentiated from others?
So we pretty much keep to the lightweight space. You know, we're long distance hike. You know, most of our business is a pack design for a lightweight hiker, I mean, a long distance hiker who's carrying, you know, between 20 and, you know, 35 pounds, somewhere in that range. So we do have packs that are specifically designed for each weight group. Like if you're carrying mostly in the 20s, low 20s, you know, then the Ohm 2 is a great pack. Far and away our most popular pack, the Circuit, is going to be great for people carrying, you know, 25 to 35, which is the vast majority of people. And then you have the people who just have to go heavier for whatever reason, and they carry the Catalyst. So they all kind of look the same, you know, they're except for size differences, but there's definitely a difference in the frames in each one, and the fabric's all the same and all that, you know, because it's a good durable lightweight fabric, but there definitely are differences in mostly the frames.
I saw a pack that was on the website that was like kind of a, you know, I've noticed there's a design movement to like no waist belt. So if you're into no waist belt, I saw you guys have a pack that kind of fits that profile.
We do. That's been out for a couple of years, the Fast Pack, and it's just a big day pack that you could overnight with. We've had people do the major trails with them, and then just recently we've offered our smaller packs, the Photon, which is a day pack, and the CD2, which is a little bigger than that. We've been it's kind of a new thing to not have belts. It's not new, but people are, it's new again. And, you know, so we've actually offered those options on those packs. And because there are other packs, you can just take the belt off if you want. They're available. But it's at the, like, the vest pack that we have is, you know, I couldn't make a living selling it. Let's put it that way.
It's kind of a niche thing.
Yeah.
Roll tops. I know that there's your packs, from what I can tell, are very, it's like everything you need and nothing you don't. And roll
tops, kind of what we try to do here. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot of packs, like everyone on these long distance trails, for some reason, there's this like vast gap between people that are like weekend backpackers that use zipper access to stuff. And then there's like guys that are on the trail, guys and gals on the trail all the time that do this roll top business. Right. And the first time I used a roll top, I was like, oh, that's excellent. That's really awesome. That's way easier than these zippers. Can you kind of talk about the benefit to a roll top versus like maybe zipping things shut? If you have any opinions on it.
I do. So zippers, you know, there's only basically the only place you find zippers on any of our packs are in the hip belt pockets.
Okay.
Just because that's kind of the best way. So zippers are heavy and they're very prone to failure, you know, and so they work well like on a small pocket on a hip belt or something else, and they get dirty, and they are the most common thing to fail on a pack. And we have the same thing on our hip belts. I mean, but the good thing is they're really easy to replace. But, you know, we just find that if your pocket blows out, the zipper blows out on your hip belt pocket, and you're 300 miles from anywhere, well, it's no big deal. You're still going to be able to make it work.
Yeah.
But if it's an integral part of your pack, then you got a problem. You know, so we just don't use them. Yeah.
And that roll top is just, it feels like it's just a nice way to if you have extra move, if you have extra stuff in the top or in your pack, you can allow for it, but it gives you some forgiveness. It also allows you to cinch it down a little more. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's super flexible, you know, depending on your load. You know, if you're carrying a small load, you just roll it down and you use all that space. If you need it, you got it. So, yeah, we don't, it's not a fixed body, which is kind of what you have to have with a, you know, with a zipper. And that's kind of common. That's pretty much what Osprey or Gregory does, you know, have that fixed size body.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. And then it all zips. Yeah.
Yeah. I try to stay away from zippers as much as possible. Just because I'm afraid they're going to blow out. Now, I'll go back to like the most common designs of like through hikers that they're using on trails is like a main body of your pack, two stretch pockets on the side, some sort of stretch pocket, and then like a back stretch pocket or, you know, to stuff layers into. And I've noticed by and large, like that basic principle, those design elements in like a roll top, I mean, that's a ULA pack, right? Like for the most part.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm not sure that we were the only or the first people to do that, but it's, you know, that was pretty much what a Gossamer gear pack was like, or, you know, at the time, maybe Six Moons or Mount Laurel Designs, you know, that's basically, you know, like you said, you know, everything you need and hopefully nothing that you don't.
Yeah.
You know, so just keeping it simple, eliminating things that can cause problems as much as possible, making it as flexible as possible in terms of load size. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and those things are all going to, yeah, they're just integral parts of it. Yeah.
Can you speak to the suspension system of it? How the stays that are used, maybe like how you guys approach the suspension of it? Like, I know everyone has a different, some people might use a carbon fiber frame or titanium or aluminum. What is ULA using these days?
So in our framed packs, which are, there are three of them and two that are kind of offshoots of the Catalyst, they all have a different frame.
Okay.
The bigger pack, the Catalyst, has a rigid foam frame with two sleeves sewn in it with two basically aluminum bars that give it rigidity. But they also, because they're aluminum bars, they give you the ability to curve the pack back, you know, so to basically adjust the way the pack fits against your back, pretty much however you need to. Then dropping down to the circuit, which has less of a frame, that has a single aluminum stay that goes in the center of the pack. Same thing, you can bend it, you know, to accommodate whatever you need to in terms of your back. Then that has a super light hoop frame, which is it's essentially an upside down U. And the straight parts of the U are basically arrow shafts. They're carbon arrow shafts. That's actually who we buy the carbon from. So if you think of an arrow without an arrow, without a blade or feathers, that's what the straight legs are. And then there's a curved part that forms the curved part of the U. And that's a super flexy plastic called Delrin, which we glue and hot shrink together. So that whole frame weighs like, you know, an ounce and a half.
Oh, wow.
But it does a tremendous job of supporting the weight. And it's super flexible and, you know, super comfortable for the right, you know, weight range. Yeah. Then you go down to like the ohm, and it loses the aluminum stay. It just has the Delrin hoop and the carbon frame. So,
and someone might...
Good answer.
Is it fair to say that someone might be like, well, why do you not have a frame in these smaller packs, these more ultralightweight packs? And I would imagine you're literally comparing, you need the frame for the amount of weight that you're carrying. When you're down to a 15-pound or a 20-pound pack, you're probably not needing that suspension as much, right? I mean...
No, you're not. Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
So,
yeah. I mean, I you know, it's all... It's going to be arbitrary and personal. I find it, you know, 18 pounds in a frameless pack works totally fine for me. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
And you still get enough weight transfer to your hips. And then, you know, if you're carrying more than that, go to a frame pack. Does it change everything? So
your most popular packs, I'm curious, they're popular for a reason. Can you kind of go into the reasons why someone would be like, okay, that's why they're using it. Is it durability? Is it the weight? Is it literally just because of the amount of weight it'll carry a little bit better, or is it size? What's the main differentiating component on your most popular pack?
Okay, so the Circuit is definitely the most popular pack.
Okay.
And it's kind of size, it's sized so that anybody who is going on any kind of extended hike, like 5 days to the Pacific Crest Trail, whatever, with newer gear, should be able to fit all their gear easily and comfortably in that pack, plus 5 days of food and however much water you need. So, you know, you've got the, it's the proper size for most people for most anything you're going to do other than maybe an overnight. So, you know, so you've got that, mm-hmm. and the size is right. You do have the flexibility of the way it's designed. You have a, you know, reasonably lightweight, you know, 2.5 pounds for that pack. You know, our, just our reputation for comfort and durability and customer service, those things. That those are all the things that make it a very popular pack.
That would make sense. I mean, I've noticed when you start getting into those more streamlined, like lightweight packs, for the most part, the person using that really has something like dialed in. Like they're like, this is exactly what I use. I use these very specific things to meet this certain weight requirement. And it sounds like the Circuit allows for someone to be like, hey, cool. Like you're an average backpacker, but you also can be super high speed as well. Like it covers a wide range of people comfortably.
It does. Yeah, it does.
Cool.
It's not a do anything pack, but it's definitely, right. If you're trying to go light and not stupid light, it's, you know, it's a good way to go.
Have you noticed an increase in general, like you're very popular on thru hikes, multiple thru hikers, you know, use these packs. Have you noticed a spike in users, if you can even track it, that are not through hiking, that are like, cool, actually, I'm going to use this pack for my general backpacking? Have you noticed that bleed over into the general backpacking community?
Well, let's just put it this way. The business hasn't grown quite 10 times what it was since I bought it, but it's probably close. You know, so not all those people are through hikers, that's for sure. So, definitely it's... That was the whole idea, was to get more out. If we have the thru hikers, you know, that's a great base for us. But they're going to tell people, and other people who are out on trails are going to see them and see that they're carrying our gear. And so, so definitely we're a lot more popular with, you know, just a weekend warrior sort of guy than we were before. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on when we talk about weight and the weight savings and the importance of saving as much weight as possible? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on why that's important to a backpacker of any kind. You know, it could be a thru hiker, it could be a weekend warrior type backpacker. What are your thoughts on weight?
Well, obviously less is better. But you get to a point where, you know, you're kind of trading, you're making a trade-off. If you have, it's pretty difficult to go out on a trail for most of us and not be carrying at least, say, 20 pounds worth of gear and food, right?
Mm-hmm.
20 to 25, that's probably pretty standard. So you can save, you know, you could get a pack that will carry that weighs a pound. We could make a pack that carries that weighs a pound. Yeah. But it's not going to be comfortable. And if your pack's not comfortable, then you're not having fun. So we think there's a pretty big trade-off to be made, you know, between getting that balance of weight and comfort so that you can, you know, comfortably carry that load. Because you're not used to walking around with 25 pounds on your back. People aren't. And, I mean, you do get used to it after, you know, you're doing a thru hike or something. But I don't know. I have people every day that are, you know, looking for the lightest possible pack and have to explain. You know, we can get you a lighter pack, but you're probably not going to be super happy with it.
Well, and that's my point, is that I think some people have this misunderstanding of, I need the lightest weight pack possible, bar none. And I'm like, cool, just grab like a knapsack and go hiking and see how that feels. But then, you know, some people go overboard. Like I have some hunting specific backpacks that are rated to carry, like you could put 80, 90 pounds in these packs and sure, you're going to feel the weight, but you're not going to, it may not feel great, but it's not going to, if you put 90 pounds of weight into a pack that's rated to 20 pounds, you're going to be in misery town. So there's just this wide range, and people are like, oh, I need super durable, and that comes with weight penalties and going ultra light. And what I found is that when it comes to weight savings, is like, dude, it literally equates to more enjoyment. Like, for the most part, like, you're going to enjoy your time under that pack a lot more than what you would with a heavy overbuilt pack or a crazy ultralight pack.
Yeah, I mean, there's a middle ground for sure, and that's our niche is, that's what we're trying to do, what we do.
What are your, when people come to you with backpacking problems, what have you noticed is like the major problem most people have with backpacks before they get into yours? Because you're going to say, hey, you should try this pack based on what I'm hearing. What have you noticed is like the major problem people have with backpacking? Or have you noticed a major theme?
The one theme I would say that stands out more than anything is that people don't have their packs are incorrectly fitted and incorrectly adjusted. That's as big as anything, which is going to lead me to a little rant that I have is about torso lengths.
Yeah.
And if you go into an REI or anybody, the first thing they're going to do is measure your torso, which is a complete, total, utter waste of time.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
If you're not smart enough to look at someone and have a really good idea which pack size is going to work for them, you shouldn't even be working there.
Yeah.
And we see just egregious results of this. I mean, saw a guy not too long ago, 6'4", went into REI, they measured his torso, told him he was a small. He believed them. He bought a small pack. I just didn't feel right. He sent me a photo. Like the hip belt's going around his rib cage. Do you think that's, do you like that? No, I don't. So there's just kind of no common sense use that people use these little tools that they have and they don't take into account. Well, that guy's got a big belly, so it doesn't matter that his torso is 19. He's got to wear his belt below his belly because he can't wear it over it. And there's just no adjustment for him. So anyhow, that's kind of my rant. And the biggest thing that I see is poor fitting. All the way through.
So what are your thoughts on fitting? So the reason why I ask is that if you ask 10 different people on how to fit your backpack, you're probably going to get 10 different answers. And my thought is that, well, maybe they're wearing 10 different backpacks. So when it comes to ULA, what are you guys preaching with when it comes to like fit and adjusting your pack?
So, we've got a fair amount of experience with it. And in terms of knowing how the strap should look when the pack is on you with a certain amount of weight and so on and so forth. So the way we address it is if you buy a pack from us, you're going to, 2 days after you place your order, you're going to get a link to a video that's going to show you how to fit and adjust the pack. And we're just kind of, crazy about it. I spend a lot of my day just helping people get their pack fitted and adjusted properly. And, it's pretty basic stuff. And the first thing you have to do is you have to lose all the stupid rules about torso measurements and where you wear your hip belt, blah, blah, blah. Every body is different. Mm-hmm. And everybody is going to wear their pack differently because of their body type. I mean, you have a guy with a big gut, right? I mean, so he's got to wear his belt low. You have a lady with like a super hourglass shape, she's almost inevitably going to wear her pack high just because that's where everything is going to work right. You get another lady with really no hips. She's going to wear a pack lower. I mean, there's just all sorts of variables and there's no one size fits all sort of thing about it. You have to be able to look at the person, look at their whole body and figure what's going to make sense to them. And then the biggest thing is how they like to wear it, not to try to put people into any kind of box like this is how you have to do that.
I'm curious, does ULA have, I don't really know this, do they have different belt sizes or is everything just like, if you buy a medium torso length, you're swapping stuff out?
We have five different belt sizes that are interchangeable on our packs. So we can go from a 24-inch waist to a 50-inch waist. So,
and then,
or bigger, yeah.
Do you guys differentiate? Is it unisex or is it male, female? Do you how do you advise men to fit over women? I guess it comes down to body type anyhow.
Well, again, it does, yeah. And so the pack itself is the same for men or women. I mean, that's just the bag. We have a different shoulder strap style that works best for almost all women. It also works really well on some guys. So we have that. And then our belts have a dual pull system. So basically our belts are, say, 6 inches wide, all right? And rather than just having one belt across the center of it, which, you know, it works, but it doesn't work great, we have a pull on both top, one buckle, but a pull on both top and the bottom. So like for a lady with hips, you know, she can have the top adjusted tighter and the bottom a little looser to her convator hips, or someone like me with hips, no, just everything is straight. We haven't shrink it and pink it sort of thing with any of our packs, but we do have, we definitely have specific things to help fit. And when we first started, none of our customers were women. And I think all the other guys are still that way, you know, but when we started making packs that really, you know, that worked on women, and now close to half our pack are sold to ladies. So,
well, I've noticed that I think I've tried on a ULA pack in a store here in Portland, and I noticed one of the major things that I take into consideration is, like, at least in the shop, you know, you never really know how it's going to feel under load, but like it hugs you, like it's very pliable, at least for the hip belt. From what I remember, is it was like cool, like it feels good.
Yeah, like if you go to, like, look at a Gregory pack, the belts are super rigid, really, really stiff.
Yeah.
And I think that their thought on that is that it helps transfer the weight. Well, if you think about people who carry weight on their hips all day, like think of an electrician or, you know, a carpenter or somebody who's carrying, you know, 30 pounds of tools on their waist, those belts are always soft. And the thing that keeps them, you know, that transfers the weight is the sheer strength of the fabric against your body. It's not the rigidity of the belt at all. So, and our belts are the same way. They're, you know, they're soft, they're comfortable, and what's holding the weight there is the sheer strength. It's not the rigidity of the belt.
I once had a backpack that had a very rigid belt on it, and dude, it felt like someone was beating me with a baseball bat after like 6 months.
Yeah, they're not fun. Yeah, you can.
It was terrible. It was, and I was like, I can't, there's no way. There's no way I can, like, am I supposed to break this thing in? It's going to break me before I break it in. Like, I'm never going to use it again. I had to sell it because it was just, I was like, maybe I'm just not built for it. And then I grabbed a pack that had a more pliable, that like, just, it kind of hugs you around the hips. And it's like, cool, I'm here, I'm going to hold this pack in place, but I'm not going to hurt you.
Right.
Suspension, is it adjustable or is it fixed torso length? Can you adjust the suspension within a medium or like a long? Or
can't
short?
Really adjust the suspension, but you can adjust the torso length.
Oh, sure, yeah, torso length.
Moving the belt up or down. The torso, I mean, the suspension is going to stay the same.
So inside of like a medium, you're getting a little bit of wiggle room then?
Yeah. Okay. And there's going to be usually a bit of overlap between sizes too.
Sure, yeah.
So, okay. You know, some people can wear, like, I can wear a medium or a large. I prefer a large.
Okay.
But I can wear either because there's enough adjustment.
Because I think some people get freaked out with, like, fixed suspensions. They're like, or torso lengths. They're like, oh, man, it is what it is. And it's nice to have that ability to adjust, do, like, minor adjustments here and there. That's nice.
Yeah, we ended up adjusting, you know, probably, I don't know, maybe half of them, you know, for people. Make minor adjustments for them, sure.
When it comes to, this is just general backpacking knowledge. Do you have, when you go backpacking with your stuff, do you have a specific way you like to organize your gear inside your pack? Do you have like a theme or like a common thread that you go for?
Well, you know, sleeping bag and some soft stuff in first, and sleeping bags first and last out. Then, you know, heavier stuff, maybe your food if you're carrying a bear can, so on and so forth. And then, you know, kind of more mid-range stuff up above that. I mean, there are a million websites out there that tell you exactly how to pack your pack. I mean, it's always going to be individual, but those are pretty good principles right there.
Well, it just cracks me up. I'll go with, there's a lot of websites, like you can just Google it, but It never fails. You go backpacking and you see that one person on the trail. You're like, dude, your pack is literally upside down. Like everything's like dangling off it. And you're like, you have the internet. You could just be like, but they think I went backpacking with a friend. He's just like, I'm just going to toss it all in here. And it's like lopsided and pulling him back. And I'm like, oh my goodness, dude.
You have to pay attention to it. You figure that out pretty soon once you've done it. You know, without paying attention.
So. You're like, man, this is really pulling back on me. Yeah, dude, you got everything heavy at the top.
But I mean, like you say, that information is very accessible to anybody who cares about it. So,
yeah. Well, dude, what else about ULA? What are your thoughts? Like, do you have anything that you'd want people to know about ULA that we haven't covered yet?
You know, I think we kind of got the essence of the company figured out there, you know.
Cool.
We're just about, you know, reliable, durable, relatively light company, you know, packs and great customer service. That's what we do.
So real quick before like maybe wrap up, I'm curious about warranties, because you've really touched on like customer service and warranties. And then I'm curious where the packs are made in the US, if anyone cares, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah. Everything's done in our shop up in Logan. Yep.
Okay. And then warranty information?
So this brings up another little interesting thing. There's a really big, a lot of hype going on about Cuban fiber, which is now called Dyneema.
Oh.
And we made packs out of Dyneema at Cuban for 2 years. And, you know, it's lighter, it's a little more waterproof at first, and it's expensive as hell. It's like $100 more a pack because the fabric's so expensive and you can't cut it. You have to cut each piece, you know, by itself. You can't cut. We usually cut 50 or 60 packs at a time. Saves a lot of labor. But what we found with those packs was that they lasted maybe a year at best, you know, with heavy use. And we've always had an unlimited warranty on our packs, and we still do. So, yeah, that's kind of a big thing. We have a lifetime warranty on our packs, and if people look at these other packs, you know, they're not only are they more expensive, but they're going to come with a one-year warranty max. So, you know, it's something to consider. There's an awful lot of marketing and hype going on with that fabric, but we know it pretty cold, and it's not what people think it is.
What's your biggest piece of advice to people backpacking? Let's say we're talking to, like, someone that's new and, like, just starting to get into backpacking. What's your big piece of advice for them?
There's just great information out there. Section Hiker blog, Eric the Black's blog. There's so many good pieces of advice out there. People are, Andrew Skirka is probably I'd say the best. You know, just go jump on his website, buy his book. You know, read and learn, and, you know, save you a lot of hassles. It's really worth it.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much, man. I appreciate your time. What's the best way for people to reach you at ULA, or at least find out more about your packs?
Yeah, just go to our website. My email address is right on the top of it. So
cool, man. Awesome.
Number. Yep. Thanks. Links to me.
So, yeah, man. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Byline Podcast. Special thanks to Chris from ULA. I can't even begin to describe how thankful I am to people like Chris that are willing to come on and talk to me for an hour about what they do, how they do it, and kind of just put their information out for the world to ingest. Means a lot to me. So if you're curious about ULA and want to get to know them more, go on their website. You can find them by just Googling ULA equipment. Or ULA packs, and it's going to be great. So it's actually the ULA letters and then ULA packs. So you can find them on the internet. Super easy. They're very, very popular packs, and they're great. The design's awesome. And yeah, if you're looking for that like hybrid pack of like, you don't want to go crazy ultralight, but you don't want to go commercial industrial size overbuilt pack, it sounds like ULA might be a good option for you. So if you enjoyed this episode, let me know. If you have any questions at all for me, you can always hit me up at emery@byland.co. Visit my website. If you want, you can subscribe to my newsletter. And if you're feeling frisky, leave me a review on iTunes. It helps me reach more people. So until next time, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll see you next time. We'll be right back.